testing. September 18th, 1979, talking to Simeon Mountain in Nulato.
Okay, you said you went to school until you were about 17?
Mm-hmm.
What happened after that? Is that when you would say you became a man? people talking about different times.
Yes. I quit school and then I started helping my uncle and aunt by cutting wood, getting water, hauling wood, helping my uncle in fishing and things like that until I went into the army. And got drafted and was inducted into the Army December 10th, 1952. And went through basic at Anchorage, Fort Ridge, during Christmas. And then went to advanced training there at Anchorage too. And then after that, I was transferred to Ladd Field, which is Fort Wayne right now. Stayed there for 21 months in a heavy motor company. And my job while I was in the army was a motorman, heavy motorman.
Was that really different for you to go from Nulato to the military?
Oh yes, it was. It was hard to get adjusted to military life.
What kind of things were different?
Oh, well, the hours, and discipline, food. It was very hard to get adjusted to.
Were there different kind of people? Different kind of ways?
Oh, yes. You've met a lot of nice friends. And some not so good. But I got along good with everyone I met while I was in my service. I didn't go to school. We couldn't go to school while we were in the army. Anything you want to take up. But you'd have to go at night. You couldn't go during the day. You'd have to go at night or on weekends. And so I didn't go to school. I wanted the evenings and weekends to myself, where I can do, things I want to do, like go to movies or just go downtown, go down to Nenana from Fairbanks over the weekend, things like that. Otherwise, I could have got a little more education, in different things, maybe even in typing or things like that. But after I got out of the army and I became postmaster, my grandma, Mary Mountain, bought a typewriter for me. So I ordered a record, touch type record, and I taught myself how to type. And I got to where I could type pretty good, but I had trouble in spelling. Otherwise, if I knew how to spell the word, I got to the point where I can type pretty good. I didn't have to look at the keys. And I use the right finger for the right key, which a lot of people couldn't do, you know. You have to look, glance down. But then my typewriter went underwater too. And, yes. And I never bought myself another one. So all the correspondence I do, which is mostly official, I don't do that, don't do very much, use pencil. Or, I mean, a pen, writing, you know, not using typewriter. But I think if I start typing again, it wouldn't take me very long. I took typing class too down here at the school a couple of years ago. I did much better than all the other students because, well, I knew about it, you know, through this record. So I didn't go. Going back to the army, I didn't go to school. Other people went to, I remember, especially through typing. We hear them talking about it. They could type this many words per minute and things like that. But I said to myself, well, what good is going to do me to learn how to type? I wouldn't have any need to. So I didn't go to school. I mean, I didn't go take up even typing.
Well, that time you went into the army, was that the first time you had spent much time in Fairbanks?
The first time I went away from home, no one told me, you know, how things to do when you're traveling. That's how come right now I admire these kids taking a lot of field trips with other people that show them with cell phones, you know. So, on my first experience in Fairbanks, we went into a restaurant. I just sat down on a chair, you know, along the counter, and I was just waiting for the waiter. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know there was such thing as a menu. And I didn't know you could order. No one told me. My buddy, Ray, and I think I was talking about him yesterday too.
When,
Ray Ambrose, yeah. He's the one that we caught the moose with. He drowned it right across the river somewhere over here with Josephine's brother. My wife's brother, two of them, drowned it in the fall this time of the year, and we never found them. Anyway, he went into the army with me too, or he went for physical with me. He was sitting on one side of me. He didn't know what to do either. Pretty soon I seen him reaching out in front of you, you know, where there was salt, pepper, napkins, sugar, and things like that. I guess he was looking around, I don't know. Pretty soon he pulled out this something, looked like a book. And then he's, oh, we're supposed to look at this, he tell me. So I opened it and see all the things you can order. So I thought right away to myself, well, I guess you just look down the list and tell the waiter what you want. And then they'll cook it the way you want. So right away I try to pick out something. When the waiter comes, she wouldn't wait too long for me to put in my order. She came along and put in my order. It was my first experience. I didn't know that we were supposed to order when we get into a restaurant. And then another time too, on the same trip, I think it was, I went to a movie. And all during the movie, which was a double feature, I wanted to go to the bathroom. I believe it was about halfway through the first one. I didn't know there was a bathroom in the building. I thought there was bathroom only in the hotel. So I had to wait till I got back to the hotel. No one told me. Or maybe all I would have to do was go out in the lobby and ask someone out there in the lobby, where's the closest bathroom, or you know, something like that. I didn't know. It was a relief after I got back to the hotel. I had money in the bank, First National Bank. You been to Fairbank? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know where the First National Bank is. I've got money over there, and I don't know how to. I don't know how to get it. I have a checkbook. So I ran out of money on our way home. In those days, we used to go for physical. And about 2-3 weeks after you come home, they let you know whether you're accepted or rejected. The army, you know. So they sent us home. And we ran out of money. My buddy Ray and I. We stopped in McGrath, coming back from Fairbanks. McGrath and then towards Luna. We stopped in McGrath around dinner time, in supper time, in the evening. And we went into this hotel, following the rest of the passengers. And we soon, they all start sitting around a table. The table was set. And, my buddy wouldn't come. He had no money, so he wouldn't come. He was staying in the lobby. And once in a while, he'd look at me and he laughed. Even he was hungry. He's reaching in his pocket, telling him, "You gotta pay," you know. I didn't pay no attention to him, and I start eating. You didn't have to order. Everybody had the same dish. And I thought the airline was paying for it. We didn't even have to order. We just sat down. The person they came by with, you know, serving you meat, potatoes. We started eating. Person, the same waitress was coming around with a piece of paper, giving a piece of paper to everybody. I looked at him. I forgot what it was. About $3.50 or $4. And that spoiled my meal. I was only halfway through. I couldn't eat no more after I saw that bill. So I went over to the cashier. She was kind of an older person. I guess she was owner of the hotel, you know. I went over to her and I told her, I have no money. I have no money to pay for the meal. But I have money at home. I could send you money. I'll send you a check. Will you give me your address? And she, oh, that's okay. You don't have to pay. She said, I told her I thought the airlines was paying. That's how come I started to eat. Then she said, no, that's okay. You don't have to pay. But I was too bashful to go back and to the table and finish my something.
Did your friend give you a bad time after you came out of there?
He was kind of sorry he didn't come after I told him that the woman said we don't have to eat. I mean, we don't have to pay. You know. The first time I was in, went for physical, they didn't accept me. I know. They don't tell you the reason. But I guess they really wanted me, so they tried again the next year. And this time I passed. back trouble those days. And after I had my physical, I about laid down for about 3 weeks and kind of my back, right here, before. Up until the day I had to go into the army. So I went up, my uncle was worried about me, thinking, how am I going to live in the army with so back? And all the way through basic, my back was really bothering me. I felt like getting my bayonet. Put it in, you know, in the snow, that was during winter. Put it in the snow and turn away, close my eyes and drop myself on the bayonet. And if it get punctured, I would feel a lot better. That's the way. But thank God I didn't do that. Yeah, I made it. All the way to the army. For about a year, I was like that. And I went to see, I didn't know how many doctors, different doctors. Finally met up with one doctor that told me that I was like that since birth. And then it started bothering me more. There was some little defect in my bone or something, in my back. And he didn't want to bother it. He said, if he operate, he might get it worse. He thought that as I was getting older, it would take care of itself. It would go away, you know. So, I just started being like that. And then after a while, I used to get like that once in a while. After a while, soon I noticed that I never have no sore back for a long time. And then I got out of the army. And then I was in the army. And I got out in 54. That's 79. How many years ago is that? 27 years ago? 25? 54. 25 years ago. And I never have sore back no more. Even to now. So I guess it took care of itself. 2 years.
Did you want to get out?
I was half and half. But I almost re-enlisted for 6. But then I changed my mind. Well, mostly on account of my uncle. I wanted to come home and help him. I was made up my mind to go for 6 more. That would be 8. And I was thinking maybe after that I would go for 12. Or within 20. If I did, I would have been retired 5 years ago. You know. But I'm glad. I think it was God's will that at the last minute, I changed my mind. Changed my mind and came home. One thing that I went to leadership school too in the army. I forgot to tell you. I told you I didn't go to any kind of school, but it was mandatory, so I had to go to leadership school, which lasts for 30 days. It teaching you how to be a leader, you know. Well, how to run men, how to give classes, and things like this. And I told the company commander that what good it would do me to go to leadership school. I'm getting out of the army. I'm going to go home in 2 months, in 3 months. And I told him I'm too dumb. I can't learn anything. Wouldn't do me any good to go to leadership school. He told me that I want to all this The whole company is talking about you and Murray. Murray and I were good friends. He's an Eskimo. They're all talking about you because you're a corporal and you never went to leadership school. And we've been sending privates and PFCs and you're supposed to go. They tell me, well, what you learn up there will help you even in civilian life. So I said, okay, I'll try. So he called me by my first name and he said, would you hang a man for trying? I told him, no, sir. Same way with me. He said, if you go up there and you try and you get kicked out because you couldn't learn or anything like that, I'm not going to bust you. I might even promote you to a sergeant. So I said, okay. I made up my mind and went up to Eielson, 26 miles away. I remember going up, we were going up in a Jeep. And I had only about 2.5 months to go in the army. I remember going up, I keep looking at the road and the door. I was going to make it some way that the door was going to open and I would accidentally fall on the road and hopefully end up in the hospital with not too many broken bones for 2-3 weeks. And by that time, it'll be time for me to get out of the army, you know. But thank God I didn't do that again. Well, anyway, we went up. Went up to Eielson. Went into this building. Went up 2 flights of stairs. And this big sign of it. The best men in the world pass through these portals, or something like that was written. Oh, my heart is about ready to quit, I guess. Then we went inside, we signed in. They started giving, we went to the supply. They gave us sheets, blankets, things like that. And then this guy said to come back, come right back. I have to give you some manuals. We said, okay. Where were you? They signed us bunks. Went back to the supply room. Pretty soon they started giving us manuals. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And it was about that high. We were barely holding 33 manuals. Yeah, 33. I look at him and I, gee, how can we read all this? And he said, oh, it's not that hard. Oh, brought it over to where we're going to sleep. They assigned us each a foot locker and a wall locker. We had to put it in there in order, you know, like by numbers, maybe 1, 15, 2, 13, 3, 15, or, you know, be done uniformly in the military manual. Anyway, we used to take subjects, different subjects, map reading, patrolling, weapons, and things like that. And every 3-4 days we would take a test. And our test used to be posted on the bulletin board. It's the end of anywhere from 10 to 12 person, maybe. There were 60 of us. 20 got kicked out, so that made it down to 40. It was very strict school. We get, I believe it was 30 demerits, we get kicked out of school. And a demerit is any little thing, like a button, nut button, nut button, or maybe your belt buckle over too much to one side. It's not right in the center. Your clothes not pressed. Your shoes not shine enough. And then you put your shoes, the rest of the shoes that you're not wearing under your bunk. It has to be all laced up. It has to be even. Maybe if one shoe is a little too far out, you get one demerit. Any little thing. Your bunk too loose. Or sometimes we put a display. Maybe our mess kit, knife, fork and spoon, or things like this. We'll put it on the bed and there's a diagram. They change it around. And if a spoon is not in the right place according to the diagram, you get the demerit. You're here not calm. Any little, a little tiny dust under your bunk. And then on weekends, or during the week, if you get 5 demerits, you can't go to town. On Saturday mornings, inspection, if you get 3 demerits, you can, for the weekend. But, I used to go to town every weekend. I never got kicked out. I gave a class in a map reading, 50-minute class. I gave 50-minute class in M14 rifle, 15-minute class on company duties, and a 5-minute talk. I gave it backwards. First you give a 5-minute talk, and you get... that one is not so bad. They tell you your weakness during the 5-minute talk. You just introduce yourself, where you're from, your family, how you make your living, things like this. And, they grade you, they critique you after to see if you're looking at only one person or one area, or if you're pacing too much, or if you're standing in one position too long. Or if you got money in your pocket and you're jingling it. Or if you got your dog tags and you're going like this while you're talking. You know, they critique you so you wouldn't do that when you're giving your classes. Then after that, we'll give a 15-minute class and 2 50-minute ones. And map reading, when the test came out, I was number 2. One person beat me, which made me disappointed, because I was off 3 degrees. We were orienting the map and trying to find out where you are on the map. I was doing that, and my map moved, or I made the line a little bit off. It was 3 degrees off. And you're allowed 2 degrees either way. I was 1 degree off. And on kind of that, I got 2 points less. So instead of getting 100, I got 98. So I came out number 2. Anyway, graduation. I came in 18th place. Out of 40. And most of them were high school and college students. Didn't do too bad. And my buddy Murray finished high school. He came in last. He always used to laugh at me. He always told me I'm smarter than you because I went to high school. I told him it's okay. Henry Murray. He's a very good friend of mine. He's from Elam. I saw him this spring when we went to camp. Went to Moses Point. And Elam was about 6-7 miles away. So I took the National Guard snow go one day just to go to see him. He was still the same. Single, not married. I don't know what he's got against girls, but in our days, 52, 54, he used to hate girls. I don't know why. So this for nothing, I asked him if he was married. No, I'm still single, he said. Then, okay.
Well, do you feel like you did learn things in that school that carried over in civilian life?
It helped me being in the National Guard. It helped me being in council.
How did it help you in the council?
It's being a leader, telling people what to do and things like that. That's about all, I guess. I forgot what I was going to say now. What do you already, you asked that question. Then I got out of the army. I told you about how I got the chainsaw, the first chainsaw. Got out of the army, came home for good, December 9th, 1954. And then again, it was hard to adjust to civilian life. I think it was harder to adjust to civilian life from military. For a while, there was just like nothing to do. So I just laid around, helping around the house, hauling wood, cutting the wood, packing it in, getting water. And I believe that was about the last time we put in a fish trap. Or was it? No. I think we put in fish trap on the river about 3 or 4 years every year after that. Because I know it. I'm pretty sure we were married at that time. Okay, then I started going beaver trapping. About 15 miles up towards Cayo. Went trapping with, I believe it was Herman Silas, my cousin. Then I came back. And my uncle Dan was supposed to be the postmaster or officer in charge, you know. But he got sick. He had a little lump, a little sore on the back of his neck, which was ringworm, and it couldn't heal for quite a while. So he went to the hospital, and they didn't know what it was. So I guess the three leaders in the community at that time, I guess, got together to try to pick out someone, officer in charge, to mind the post office. That was Father Bo, Max Handolf, the present postmaster at that time, and my uncle Dan. So I guess they picked me out. And well, they asked me if I wanted to take care of the post office for a while. Thought about it. And I told them, no, I don't want to. I'm young. I want to go travel. I want to go to other villages when there's good time. I don't want to be tied down. I've been tied down all my life. I never traveled even during my teenage days, like other boys. I was always forbidden, you know. my aunt to forbid me to go to Kaiku, Caltech, or Galena for anything, really, good time or funerals or anything. I was stuck in the army for 2 years. Now I'm free. I want to be free. Well, just take care of it for a while till they find someone. I'm too dumb. I couldn't learn how to run a post office. Sure, you learn. You're not going to be young all the time. Max and Justin. It's better than beaver trapping. And you're right in the house. You don't have to go out in the cold, in snow. Or in summer, you don't have to go outdoors, work in the rain, and things like that to make a living. You can make a comfortable living working in the building, being a postmaster. So I said, okay, I'll take care of it for a while. And he gave me about 2 hours of instructions. Just the day before his retirement. But the best thing he told me was, if you get stuck, all you have to do is look at my work. Just look at the books around here, and you'll figure it out. After talking to me for maybe a couple hours, explain. The last thing he told me was, if you get stuck, you couldn't figure something out, look at my work. That was the best thing he did. So the first few days, it wasn't easy, but I figured it out. And of course, he was right one block away, half a block away maybe. I could always go up and see him, you know, but I didn't bother him. I just took over and I moved the post office from where he had it up the last building to about 30 feet from Summer's store. I had it there for a couple of years and then moved into the center of town over here for, I don't know, maybe 18 years. Then we moved over here the last 2 years. The last two, but when I first moved it, moved out, when I first took over, I had to rent a building.
Well, yeah. You mentioned that your aunt and uncle wouldn't let you go traveling like the other boys. Why wouldn't they let you do that?
You wouldn't write it.
Things you don't want.
Will you remember that part? It wasn't my uncle, but it was my aunt. She was just mean to me, that's all. No travel for me. Otherwise, it had nothing to do with Indian ways, you know. I just didn't want me to enjoy myself. I used to bring it up to her once in a while. She was very, very strict with me. I don't want that thing to be written either. This between us, I was raised 50, 60 years back, maybe. My uncle didn't know about it, you know. So my aunt raised me like 50, 60 years ago. So she was mean at me. She paid up for it over the last few years of her life. I still love her very much. I used to tell her, you know, she died not too long ago. I used to tell her these things, how I used to get off the table hungry sometimes, a lot of times. Don't always talk about it, you know. But I could never forget. You could never forget how you were raised, you know. Morden paid them back. They didn't have to feed me or clothe me since I was 14. Since I was 14, I was started to make my own money. Start helping buying groceries, buy my own clothes, buy my own guns.
How did you make your own money
then? I started working at the clinic down here. It was Alaska Native Service Clinic at that time, and we used to have a regular nurse, you know, not health aides. So I worked there from 1946 to 1952. 1946, and I was born in 32. So that makes me 14. Yeah, I was 14. That made me 14. I remember my first paycheck after working 4 months, $136. And I thought I was a millionaire. I thought of it again a couple of weeks ago when my niece across the street comes in with a $560 check, youth corps check. I was thinking to myself, oh, how she must feel. I thought I was a millionaire after working 4 months when I got my first check, $136. So I worked on there, 52 to 54, then 46 to 52, 52 to 54. I was in the army. And then April 1st, 1955, I took over the post office. And January 1st, 1956, I got my commission as postmaster. I've been postmaster ever since. So I've been working almost continually, except for 4 months, I believe, in between, since 1946. That's 33 years ago. With full retirement coverage, those 6 years that I worked for the ANS clinic, I wrote about it to the Federal Reps Bureau in Washington to see if I could get any retirement on it. They wrote back and told me that since I didn't pay any retirement, I would get 10%. So I wrote back to them and I told them I don't want to get 10%. I want to get 100%. How much would it cost me to pay retirement for those many years? They wrote back and they sent me. It wasn't a real, you know. I didn't have to pay something like $340 or something like that. And if I paid the $340, I would get 100%. So I was in the National Guard at that time. I went up Kike River for 3 weeks with the army on a riverboat patrol. So with my check, I paid my retirement.